He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Oh my God, you had to deal with the golf course people too!
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
What's up everybody? Welcome into another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you. Got a little morning drive cranked up this morning as we recap the Bermuda Championship. Get ready for the Houston Open because I will be out of the country later this week. We will not have a second episode to preview the Houston Open. So due to our schedules, we don't have DraftKings odds yet. We don't have betting odds yet, but we're going to give you kind of the field at Houston, talk about kind of what we think of the event. Phil did end up down there. A lot of major winners in Houston, best field that they've had in quite some time, with it being the week before the Masters. But we got to talk about Bermuda. And 48-year-old Brian Gay gets it done, birdies 18 in regulation, hits it to a foot, and then in the playoff, hits it to about 12 feet and rolls that in. Wyndham Clark cannot convert on a 10-footer in regulation or in the playoff, misses them both, pars 18 both times. And Brian Gay gets his first win in about 7.5 years at the age of 48. Pretty impressive stuff from Brian Gay with a Sunday 64.
Yeah, and when you talk about, we talk, you know, about Big Bryson and these long hitters that are dominating the game.
Wait, who's a long hitter?
Big Bryson. Brian Gay is the exact opposite of that. He is. I mean, we both in this podcast might hit it further than Brian Gay does. And so you look on top of that, and people think, oh, distance is where the game's going. Well, you know, did you say he was 48, Colby, or 47?
48 years old.
48 years old. A 48-year-old gentleman who
hadn't won in 7.5 years.
Hadn't won 7.5 years. Was never known as hitting it far. I had watched him play at a couple of the PGA Tour events I went to in the past. This guy was not long by any stretch of the imagination. And I guarantee he's gotten to be 48. He hasn't gained distance over these last 10 years or however long it is.
He's gained a little bit, but I mean, everybody's gained because of the technology. You're speaking relatively to the field.
Yes. He's not going to be a bottom, you know, 60 to 70% distance guy.
He didn't go from a short hitter to a bomber.
30%.
Yeah, exactly. He actually has added a little bit of distance, but I mean, relative to the field, he's still way behind.
Correct, exactly. Like even Tiger says it. Tiger says that he hits it further now than he ever did, right. But he's 30, almost middle of the pack, almost in distance.
And 20 years ago, he was longest on tour.
By far. And so, you know, that goes to show, you know, we're just kind of bringing it all back here to people talk about, oh, the game's going in distance, we need to dial the ball back. I mean, if you dial the ball back for Brian Gay, I don't know, I mean, how far would he hit it?
Yeah, the problem is, I think if you dial the ball back, you're punishing the shorter hitters even more, because I think then the gap from the Brysons to the Brian Gays would be even more pronounced.
That's exactly what it is.
Because Bryson would still be able to reach all these par fives in two, even if you dial the ball back. He'd be hitting longer clubs in, but he'd still be able to reach them all in two. And Brian Gay, if you dial the ball back, is almost certainly going to have to lay up into every par five. So I think it would, hurt the shorter players as much as it would the longer players, if not more. But, you know, he was three back on the back nine. Wyndham Clark had a three-shot lead with about six holes to play and wasn't able to get it done. Had a bunker shot on the par three 16th. And, I mean, you could tell watching the highlights, I mean, he brought the club back maybe shoulder high and just kind of chopped at it, chunked it, barely got out of the bunker into the rough, made a bogey there. There was some nerves from Wyndham Clark. So
yeah, I mean, he was 7 under through 11 holes, and then played his last 7 at 1 over, no birdies in there. He had the par 5 17 to play, and you know, he had it rolling, then all of a sudden looked like he put it in cruise control, like one of those when you've seen it a couple times in the NFL or NCAA games, you get up 15 or 20 points, all of a sudden you coast and you know, don't put all the pressure on
you. A little prevent defense,
start aiming in the middle of the greens, you lay back off some tee boxes when you shouldn't, maybe that kind of thing. And so, you know, Wyndham, this would be a good learning experience for him. You know, he's a young guy. He was an OSU Cowboy for a good amount of time. He transferred to Oregon, where I believe didn't in the NCAA Nationals, didn't Oregon play OSU like the year after that he...
Yes, they did.
And the match player...
Oregon won. I think
they played in the finals, as a matter of fact.
Did they? I thought they played in the semis.
Because
then didn't OU beat Oregon in the finals that year?
I think you are right on that.
Yeah, because I think we could have had a Bedlam National Championship match. But Oklahoma State lost to Oregon in the semis, so there was an OU-Oregon National Championship match. So OU kind of caught a break there, because obviously they wouldn't have beaten Oklahoma State. It's just not a good matchup for them. But
That's I like to see Trout Talk smack. Yeah, and it's we might be getting our years mixed up here, but nevertheless, yeah, you know, just going back to Wyndham Clark, you know, he's young guy, so this is something that he'll take as a learning experience. Where going to a playoff, you lose, had an opportunity to extend the playoff, and or obviously he had a chance to win in regulation and then to extend the playoff, wasn't able to do either one of those, and so I think these are something that, you know, like we saw with Morikawa, where he had those missed short putts, young, and then he was able to rebound very quickly by winning the. It was the work day, not the memorial, but and then end up winning a major championship just about a month and a half later. So maybe Wyndham will be able to use some of this momentum that he earned, because, I mean, we've been tracking it through our DraftKings and everything. I mean, Wyndham, he'd had his sparks, but he hadn't been playing particularly well going up into this point.
It's been all right.
It's not one of those guys that we look at and was like, oh, he'd been finishing top 25 every week and doing all that. I mean, he had been fairly sporadic. So for him to be able to get this nice high finish, I think is something that maybe be able to prepare him going forward. And a lot of times you learn most from your mistakes more than you do from your successes, so this might end up being something kind of like the Chinese farmer analogy, maybe something that Wyndham Clark looks back on it may be beneficial to his career as opposed to hurtful.
Yeah, you by the way, speaking of bad golf, your boy Brendan Todd, defending champion, who you picked in the one and done, he missed the cut by a lot.
He finished
at four over. A lot of people, a lot of pulls I was in DraftKings. Little pick and pull.
Four over didn't get you to the weekend at this tournament?
Four over did not make the weekend, shockingly, at the Bermuda Championship with the sideways wind blowing on Friday. And there was some wind on the weekend, too, but I don't think it ever got as bad as it was on Friday afternoon. And he didn't make it, so you fell another 61,000 behind in the race for Canes.
You know, it's all right. Yeah, we've got the infamous loophole that we had where Tony Finau had the COVID, and I didn't get any money for that, and I ended up having Wolf in the other deal finish T2. But I'm going to have the Masters winner coming up in a few weeks, so it'll solve all these loopholes, and I'll be enjoying that nice Canes.
I mean, you're still only about $1.2 million behind.
And that's
a lot of money on the table the next 2 weeks.
I'll be 1.2 million ahead in a couple weeks, so that's all that'll matter.
Yeah, it's you're at 5.7 million roughly, and I'm at about 6.9 million. Nice.
Yeah, that is very.
I might just not make picks the next 2 weeks.
Just to stay there. That's honestly probably a good idea.
Because if I could win the pool at 6.9 million.
I think there was an unwritten clause that if you had 6.9, you automatically got double your bet.
Ian. Yeah. So what about the Red River team challenge that took place? We got a little OJGT versus TJGT. That would be the Oklahoma Junior Golf Tour and the Texas Junior Golf Tour. We had Maury Rose, the director of the OJGT, on with us on Friday. It was a great interview and talked about the Red River Team Challenge, which is always a lot of fun and great for junior golf in the state of Oklahoma. Taylor, I have not yet seen the results. Give me and our listeners an update. Tell us something good.
Oh, yeah. So we're going to Red River website here. So for anyone who didn't listen, make sure to go back and listen to our podcast we had on with Maury Rose, director of the OJGT, Oklahoma Junior Golf Tour, the Red River Team Challenge they had this last weekend down at Doran Keels. One of the best junior tournaments, especially in this area, if not the country, gathers the best juniors from Oklahoma and Texas together. And they got to play a fabulous event this last weekend, a tournament I'd played in numerous times. Just a great event. Many of the great Oklahoma players had played there. Taylor Gooch, friend of our show, had played in the tournament. Taylor Moore, friend of the show, had played in the tournament, and a lot of other great players had as well. So scrolling through here, we got a boys and girls division. So I scroll through onto the boys division, and local guy Andrew Goodman ended up winning Oklahoma from Norman. That guy's a beast. And also our close friend Ryder Cowan finished T2, which was unfortunately it was five shots back because Goodman was able to get to three under, and T2 was plus two, but still a tied second in a Red River team challenge like this is a great accomplishment to have. And so, you know, I scroll through here, Colby, and I look at the list, and here's the list of states that represented the top 20 of the tournament. So read it down. I see Oklahoma, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, Florida, Oklahoma, 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 Arkansas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, Mexico, Oklahoma. Then we finally get to Texas down at T15. So there was not a Texas a player from the state of Texas inside the top 14 in the Red River. I don't know if that has ever happened.
That's brilliant, I think.
That is awesome.
I mean, it's awesome. And they got great weather this weekend. Got really lucky with the weather. Ice storm middle of last week. You know, it wasn't as bad down in Ardmore, but the weather was still not good. And then they get 65, 68 and sunny both days over the weekend. So good event that took place down in Ardmore. I'm glad to see the Oklahoma guys play so well. So yeah, exactly, Oklahoma Junior Golf's in a good place.
It is in a really good place. Yeah, on the girls division, looks like Alexa Saldana from Mexico ended up winning by 6 strokes. So that was one hell of a victory.
Good for
and
her.
Looks like, we got Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Texas, Texas. So looks like Texas a little bit more dominant on the girls' side. But as you see on the boys' side, the Oklahoma boys, at least on the top-heavy part, just ran away with it.
Yeah, no doubt. Awesome. Good stuff, and I'm sure Dornick was phenomenal.
Yes, it is.
Dornick's a lot of fun. You told me they're doing some redesigns down there.
Looks like they're cool. I'm not sure exactly when they're starting about doing it, but they're going back to kind of the original Maxwell design. So it'd be interesting to see what it turns out to be, and I've always loved Dornick. So it's one of those things to where, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But at the same time, it kind of was Maxwell's original masterpiece, and so I think that they're, from the way I understand it, they're bringing in Tom Doak, who, for anyone who doesn't know, designed Pacific Dunes, Terra ET in New Zealand, Bandon Dunes. There's another really big one that I'm completely missing off the top of my head. But
boy, those are some big ones right there, though. Pac Dunes and Bandon, and then Terra ET, one of those beautiful golf courses in the world down in New Zealand.
Exactly, and I mean, like I said, there's a couple more that I'm not even thinking of, and so they're going to try to get it back to the original design, and I hope they don't change it a whole lot because I love Dornick, but I mean, it's just like anything, even Augusta National, it's the best golf course in the world, but there's probably one or two tee boxes you could adjust, you might be able to change a green here or there, just because it's a 9.999 doesn't mean it couldn't be a perfect 10, it's just a matter of if you start doing something, don't make it worse as opposed to make it better like you're trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, one thing that we forgot to mention and just popped up on Morning Drive made me think of it, 64-year-old Fred Funk, averaging 234 yards off the tee, made the cut this week at Bermuda, and that is just brilliant.
234 off the tee.
234. Made the cut.
Wow. Let's dial the ball back.
And shot 75-71 on the weekend. He ended up finishing T59 of the 68 players who made the cut.
Yeah. Distance taking over the game. I mean, you can't make money if you don't hit the ball far anymore. You got to dial it back.
By the way,
I know I've gotten down the rabbit hole here, but it's just pisses me off. You have a 48 guy win the tournament. You have a guy who averaged 235 off the tee box with a modern golf ball. It's not like he was using persimmon woods or anything. Went out there and made him a check on the PGA Tour, and we're talking about doing all this. It just blows my mind. But go ahead, Colby.
I was just going to ask if you saw where your hero finished in this tournament.
I did. My hero, Afro Barnrat. Was it
T11?
Yeah, boy, that's the highest finish he's had in some time. And so that is a good sign of things to come for my hero. And, it's almost like if I had a mural, like you walk into like a church and they have those glass.
That'd be pretty cool.
Like Jesus and all that,
You don't have any tattoos. You know what you should do? Big life-size Kyrdek Apple Barnrat tattoo. Blowing the vape right across your back.
How the hell could I do life-size?
Well, I mean, you'd only be able to get like the head and the shoulders.
I could get his.
I mean, obviously, it wouldn't be actual size, but you could get his head at the top middle of your back, and then shoulders, and then blowing the vape. Oh man,
I was about to say. I mean, I used to be pretty fat. I've lost a little weight, but I'm not that fat, Colby. Dang.
No. It would be like 3-4 size. That way, it can't turn on you.
3-4, 75. Let's go down to 69% size.
69%. I think that makes the absolute most sense. This is what we're gonna do. We're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna come back on the other side. We're gonna talk about Houston. We're gonna talk about Charlie and Tiger. We're gonna talk about Tony Finau dancing on Halloween. We got a lot still to get into here. Obviously, Bermuda, man, the weird hours in Bermuda, it's stuck way out in the middle of the Pacific or the Atlantic Ocean, a couple hours east of here as far as time zones go. By the way, should we rant now or rant later about the fact that the time changed yesterday and it's just one of the worst things that our civilization continues to do?
I think it's a good thing to say for after the break.
Yeah,
because it is a ranting subject for sure.
Absolutely. All right, stay with us here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcrayroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back. Rolling along here on the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you. Make sure to find us online, the73rdhole.com, and find us on social media, 73rd Hole, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Go check that out, where we post the links to this podcast every single week. By the way, I saw a link yesterday and ended up getting taken down. I think Tiger got mad, but somebody, it was reported that it was one of like Joaquin Niemann's, they were having like some sort of coaches clinic or something, and somebody took a video of Tiger and Charlie at Medalist hitting golf balls out on the range, and it was like a 6-second video. Basically, they were both lined up to the ball. Charlie swings, and about at the time that he gets to the top of his backswing, Tiger starts his swing, and then they basically swing almost in unison on the range, and I mean, just pure as could be. Charlie's going to be an absolute stud. If he's got the mental makeup to get it done, he's going to be an absolute stud, because the golf swing is pure. But then, like 10 minutes later, the video was taken down. I sent it to you so you could try to watch it. Apparently, somebody got word back to the big cat that they were tweeting out videos of him and his son hitting range balls. And, you know, Tiger likes his privacy and probably likes privacy for his 11-year-old. So Tiger went ahead and shut that down, and the video ceased to exist from the internet.
And so, I mean, that's the name of his yacht, Privacy.
Privacy.
Yeah, so he does love his privacy. And so I think it's just one of those deals to where I didn't see as far as into as you did, Colby, where it was. I didn't even know what the situation was. I assumed it was just some member out of Medalist who'd got it. But apparently it was a Joaquin Niemann clinic or something that was going on. So that makes a little bit more sense. And, you know, two sides of that. One, I think, like you said, it was might be best for Tiger to try to do that to get Charlie started on it initially, you know, because he doesn't want his son out in the limelight. I mean, he was already in the spotlight for Tiger being out there caddying for him in the U.S. Kids event or whatever the tour was that he was playing in. And
yeah, it was U.S. Kids.
It was U.S. Kids, yeah. And so for, you know, Charlie to already getting all this exposure, I think Tiger has, I mean, especially in his stardom and throughout all his how many ever years of being a world-famous athlete, knows that there are so many cons that can come from that as opposed to the pros.
Yeah, wants to protect Charlie a little bit.
Yes,
from the exposure.
Correct. I think that. I mean, if you know, like for example, it hasn't stopped someone as much as like Bronny James, LeBron James' son. But you know, if Charlie's 11, he's got a camera on him every single junior tournament it goes to, then it's going to change how he would normally play as opposed to if he didn't. I mean, just think about it. I mean, a 12-year-old kid, doesn't matter if Tiger Woods your dad or not, if you got more media and people at these junior tournaments and all these other kids are just out there with their parents and grandparents, I mean, it's an entirely different feel, at least from my perspective it is.
Yeah, it is. And if Charlie does end up becoming a great player and, you know, if he loves golf and wants to be an all-time great, then go do it. If he doesn't and he wants to go play tennis or just, you know, go to school and be a doctor, do whatever you want to do. But if he decides to be a golfer and come out, he's going to have publicity, especially once he gets past high school. If he goes and plays college golf somewhere, he's going to be a serious attraction because everyone loves Tiger so much that I think as Tiger fans, we almost feel like we could get an extension of Tiger for another 20 years. And I got to say, I'm in.
That was exactly the point I was about to make, because you look at the timeline of it. Tiger is 44, correct? About to be 45?
Yeah, December 30th, 1975. So he'll be 45 next month.
Be 45. And so we look at Charlie, who is 11, and I can't remember when his birthday is. So he's 11 to be 12, whatever it may be. And so you look at this timeline here, and you're thinking, let's see, 45. Let's see, we go to 50. Tiger is, you know, we got five years. Tiger will be 50. So we got 5 years now. Charlie will be 16 to 17 range.
Yeah, February 8th. Charlie turns
they're just a little over a month away from birthday wise. So essentially they're going to be within the same amount of gap pretty closely. So when Tiger is 50, Charlie will have turned 17. And so you're kind of getting into that point, like you said, to where their careers may overlap a little bit.
That'd be sweet.
And then it goes.
You think Charlie will be one of those guys? You know, we see like Spieth come out and some of these guys come out and they'll play like the Byron Nelson or something when they're 15 or 16 years old. We saw the kid at the Masters. I think he was from China several years ago, like a 14-year-old play the Masters. I don't know. Again, I don't know how good Charlie is. Obviously, he's winning all these kids' events. That's a lot different than getting out and playing with the big boys. Very, very different. But it'll be fun to watch. And I hope that we can all have fun with it without putting an over amount of pressure on Charlie to be his dad, because that's not fair to put on anybody. You know, I don't expect Charlie to go out and win nine times in a season and win four majors in a row. Just, I would love to see him play.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's two distinctions between the two comparisons you made there, Colby. One is, obviously, you talk about Spieth of the Byron Nelson. He was the number one ranked junior in the world, but he was on a sponsor's exemption. And the 14-year-old who played at the Masters, his name slips my mind at the time, but he won the Asia-Pacific Am. So he actually earned
He qualified.
He qualified. Yeah. And I mean, Spieth, number one junior, I mean, he earns that, but that's a sponsor exemption. And so my point being is that, is there any tournament that wouldn't give a top five junior, Charlie Woods Jr., 16 or plus old kid, a exemption in their tournament, sponsor exemption?
Yeah, you'd have to think they'd want to.
I mean, I used to say this all the time about Sam Saunders, Arnold Palmer's son, how I feel.
Grandson.
I'm sorry. Yeah, exactly. Grandson. Yeah, you can't really be someone's son, but it's a different last name. Nevertheless. But so, yeah, grandson. And I thought that there was a couple of times, especially when he was younger, where he might have got a few head starts because he was Arnold Palmer's grandson, which, I mean, you see that in any industry. I mean, that's just how the world works. And so, you know, if Charlie is going to go down that road, I just hope that he's not handed everything on a silver platter like he's going to be given to already. You know, go out there and win the tournaments to get into the events. You know, don't go out there and be the guy who's just getting in. Kind of like for example, like the Tony Romo when he gets into the PGA Tour events. Like, you know, he plays good. You know, he'll play good, but he's never going to be a serious factor, you know. And it's like, don't get into these tournaments and don't take spots away from people that could win if you're not going to be a serious factor and take it seriously.
Yep, I'm with you. By the way, this week in Houston is really good field. I wondered if some guys were going to skip with the whole fans thing, but it's a limited number. I guess they've gotten assurances from the PGA that everything's going to be safe.
Didn't Phil come out and said he was going to play Houston?
Phil is going to play Houston, yes, which I was a little bit surprised about based on his comments a couple of weeks ago. But, I mean, yeah, just listen to some of those names here. I'll rattle off 15 or 20 names real quick. Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Jordan Spieth, Sergio Garcia, Zach Johnson, Shane Lowry, Francesco Molinari, Henrik Stenson, Hideki, Phil Mickelson, Tyrrell Hatton playing this week, Adam Scott, Victor Hovland.
This is a 10 times, I mean, maybe even 100 times better field than I thought we'd see.
And what we usually see in Houston, and yeah, I did not think that we were going to get this good of a field. It's just, I mean, really, some guys like playing the week before a major. Russell Henley is in this week. Tony Finau is in this week. Friend of the show, Taylor Gooch, is in this week. Harry Higgs, everybody loves, he's in this week. I mean, this field's got a lot of names in it. It's a big field, and a lot of guys just want to play the week before the Masters.
Get after it. Have they listed anything, Colby? What they said they're having fans, and they said a limited capacity. Have they said a number on
not
the
that
ticket?
I know
have they
of.
Posted because. Like, you've seen it sometimes in the college football where they're like, oh, we're only going to have 25% fans or whatever, and you look over there and, like, 75% of the stadium is filled, and you're like,
what? Shout out Texas A&M.
Thank you very much.
Shout out Texas A&M.
And you're like, wait, what? What's going on here? And so, you know, that's what I was wondering if they're, you know, did they set a cap on, you know, we're going to sell 500, 1,000 tickets, that kind of thing. And so I'll be interested to see. I mean, I actually have a friend who lives down in Houston, so I might actually text him, see if he's going to end up going down there. Maybe he could find out what the protocol is on that. But I find that interesting to see. And you shout out Texas A&M. Which is in College Station, Texas, not too far away from Houston. Might be a little less lenient on the rules than they need to be, which is something that I hope does not happen to, because how unfortunate would that be? One of these players plays this week in Houston Open, and then let's say just like not even one of them, but let's say 2, 3, 4, 5 of them have to miss the Masters because of COVID. I mean, that would be just highly unfortunate. Let's hope that. Let's just hope that doesn't happen in general, but let's hope that that doesn't happen from a lack of protocol, safety protocol from the fans and from the tour.
Yeah, because I think if that were to happen, and obviously that would be worst case scenario, that would be a huge embarrassment, I think, for the PGA Tour to basically go flawlessly for 4 months. Right, since the restart? 4 or 5 months since the restart?
Well, I mean you've had your periodic positives here
one,
and there.
Yeah, one here and there.
Yeah, but and then you'll have your withdrawals from players who either played in the same group or the caddies.
Like the U.S. Open, we had Scheffler miss, and then we had those tournaments in Vegas that DJ had to miss. Finau had to miss one or two, but it hasn't been a wave.
Like
Koepka's
caddy had it, so then he withdrew. McDowell's caddy had it. So you've seen some instances like that where it wasn't necessarily the player, but someone who
was close proximity,
or
contact
like
tracing.
Webb Simpson had a family member who had it, so then he withdrew. So, but you know, going back to the fans, I think this is a really big tournament for the tour when it comes to when and how many fans do we get? How many fans do we allow back, and how soon do we bring them back? Because if we do have a situation like we just mentioned, Colby, if we do have multiple players test positive after this tournament, it's going to be a long time before we see fans on the golf course again.
Yeah, I think so too. And I don't know what the I don't know what the protocols are going to be, because obviously you have the ropes up and everything. But what I'm really curious to see what they do is when a guy steps up and he sprays it, but behind the ropes. And, you know, everybody swarms around it. You know, I'm sure they'll tell people not to, but you know everybody's going to. What happens then to get everyone away and make sure that a golfer doesn't have to get close to fans?
Well, and you know, and there's... I haven't been to the course where they're at the Redstone, whatever it's called now, where they're having the Houston Open up. But, you know, there's a lot of courses where, like you mentioned, Colby, if you're on the side of the ropes and let's say there's trees or something there, if you get enough people there... there's no way that people can stand so far apart away from each other. So, you know, are there more situations set up like when you think of Augusta, right? There's no people back behind of 12 green or 13 tee box. It's not because they purposely set it up like that, but there's just no land. So, you know, for the example I'm trying to make is, are they going to set up more areas like that to where certain greens and tee boxes will be marked off that usually wouldn't be, because people, they don't want a numerous amount of people to get back there because it's so closed off. I think these are all things that you don't really ever think about before in a PGA Tour event, and or at least you didn't before the environment. And now these are all things the tours and the Houston Open are having to take into consideration. And like I said, this is it looks on paper like, oh, we're just having fans back. I mean, this is a big deal for the tour, I think, because the people, if they're not allowed to have fans going forward, sponsors are going to be less likely to host tournaments because you're not going to be getting all the revenue you get from the tickets. So I think this is a really big tournament, and that's going to be, in all honesty, for me, Colby, I'm really excited for the Masters, and there's so many storylines there. I think how the fans impact this tournament is the biggest storyline for me for this tournament.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm looking at the scorecard right now. Assuming that they play everything the same par that they play it usually, that's on the scorecard, it's par 72. There are five par fives, so it's entirely possible that on the PGA Tour they would shrink one of these down and play it as a par four. You know, like the first hole's a 522-yard par five. I don't know exactly how that lays out. Obviously, that'd be a very long par four, but you could make that hole a par four if you so chose. And then there's another short par five on the back that's 529, so I don't know if these are down.
You can always make a hole shorter. You could tee him off 10 feet from the green if you wanted to.
True. You can tee him off wherever you want. So, and I'm surprised Mike Davis hasn't done something like that in the past.
Like a real long par three, just set you up like short sided, like 40 yards from the green. Yeah. Like obviously it's tee box, so you could put it, but have to put it in the rough. I mean, it'd be, talk about an interesting concept.
That'd be awesome.
Imagine U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, and you have to tee off on 17, like where Watson hold out for him. You know, put that flag there and just hit your first shot, and that'd be really, really interesting.
That would be really cool. It would totally make golf weird, and the scores would be all weird, but it'd be a lot of fun. By the way, Taylor, we're currently recording. It's 9:48 in the morning, and it should be 10:48 in the morning. The fact that we still, in the year of 2020, roll our clocks back every fall, make everyone miserable. We had a 25-hour day yesterday. It got dark at 5:30. I hate it. It's the worst thing that we do every year, and I don't know why we all keep agreeing to do it. Why don't we all just leave our clocks forward and just tell them no, we're not doing it.
Okay, so I was looking up some of this the other day, and you know, people talk about, oh, Benjamin Franklin's the father of it, and that's not how it works. And so, you know, like people talk, like Arizona doesn't observe daylight savings time, and so, you know, it's like not one of these things where everyone does it. According to the article I'm reading here, only 40% of the countries worldwide observe it, so we're all kind of going off of different times here.
Yeah, that's stupid.
So it's really, really weird. And so the first time daylight savings was ever used, Colby, was in Canada in 1908, as a matter of fact. And then the first countries to overall do it, which I thought this was interesting, was Germany and Austria in 1916. Do you know what those countries were doing in 1916, Colby?
They were busy.
They were battling each other to a heavy extreme with heavy machine guns and lots of death.
Yes, so that was World War One, for those of you who are not real familiar with your world history.
Yes. So for the whole world to copy something that some fairly bad people were doing during, I mean, obviously, people who've been in daylight savings may not have been the horrible people who did. Nevertheless, I just find it funny that we all try to copy something that was occurring during the countries that essentially started World War One, which is just a slight side note that I thought was interesting on our part, and kind of goes to show that You know, I really, because the whole principle of it, Colby, is to save energy. And I don't really know how that does that. Because think about it. If you,
I actually think I spend more energy trying to fit my whole day in before 5:30 when the damn sun goes down.
Well, I, that's exactly what
I know what you're saying. More energy. That's not what you meant. But,
I completely.
Also, the mental energy that I expend complaining about it every year. It's exhausting.
You've hit all the nails on the head. And then even too, when you think about it, it's like daylight saving. So when you save energy, well, if the sun sets earlier, then we use more energy inside to light up everything. And then if the light is out more during the summer, then the energy's coming in and it's hot and then we're outside more. And so the whole concept of it doesn't make any sense to me. And for us golf lovers, we want to be able to golf as late as we can.
Yeah, that's my big problem with it, is that now we can't golf in the afternoons even. I mean, you can't even tee off at 2 o'clock and get around in if you're playing, you know, on a packed course. Tee off at 3 o'clock, you damn sure can't get around in.
Well, and like right now, the sun is rising a little bit earlier, but once it starts getting colder, it'll start rising about the same time it would anyway. And no one's going out to golf early in the winter anyway. So even if the sun rises earlier, none of us are going out there to freaking do it. So what's the point? And it's, I mean, we're looking at daylight savings as it's completely should revolve around the golf world. And in my opinion, I think it should, and I think we should just get rid of it.
Yep. Absolutely. I'm all the way in. You got a winner this week in Houston? We won't be able to record later in the week. It's a little early.
No, we'll, what are you leaving tomorrow night or Wednesday?
We're leaving early Wednesday morning. We fly out about 7 o'clock Wednesday morning. Got a wedding this weekend in Cancun that we're going to. Weather's supposed to be terrible. There's a hurricane a few hundred miles south, and we're going to get all the rain out of it in Cancun. So, supposed to be getting nice and flooded the whole time we're down there. That'll be fun.
They picked the right time to go, at least. So
yeah, absolutely.
Good.
So,
we'll make sure to get our DraftKings picks and our one and done picks out on our social media pages before, probably by tomorrow night, I would assume. So yeah. Before you get on the plane.
That way we'll have a little more time to research. Obviously, DraftKings numbers aren't even out yet, but one of
we don't have DraftKings, we don't have strength of field, we don't have tee times, because of daylight savings pushing us up an hour has just messed everything.
It has absolutely screwed. If not for daylight savings, we would be able to give you everything.
Every single thing.
Absolutely everything.
This 1 hour is making the biggest difference.
Yep, no doubt about it. So good luck to all the guys in Houston this week. 73rd hole. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We'll tweet out our picks.
I will say this before we get off. Whenever it comes to sleeping, falling back is a lot better than springing forward, though, may I say?
Completely. I get excited to spring forward. We lose an hour of sleep, but then I know it's going to start getting dark later. So I get really excited for spring forward.
Well, what happens when you have to get up on Sunday and you oversleep?
That's fine. That's fine. See, the way I look at it, I sleep when I'm dead. I can't play golf when I'm dead.
Well, the way I see it, Colby, is if you look at it from that way, you just got to get up early when we fall back and just go out and play early in the morning when it's 30 degrees outside.
I was up at 7:30 yesterday.
Were you out golfing?
I was not. My course is closed from tree damage.
Ooh.
Yeah, greens are still closed. They said they're hoping to have 9 holes open by tomorrow. I've received some pictures, and the tree damage is pretty significant.
It's not the only course in the state or this area that has had to deal with that. And so I know that I've had to help some family with some tree issues. You've done your own tree stuff. You're actually going down to help some family today.
I'm headed to Chickasha. That's why we're recording this morning. I'm headed down to do trees, and we can't record tomorrow because you're headed down to do trees.
Exactly. And one last thing before we get out here, everyone, for anyone who's listening on Monday, today is the 2nd. Tomorrow is the 3rd. Everyone, go out and vote. If you're not registered to vote, get registered and go vote.
Yeah, well, get registered for the next election, because you can't register now. But if you are registered, go vote.
You can't. I think you can. Isn't there a way to do it where you can get registered super fast? I think there is a way you can do
that. Is there?
I thought
you had to be registered like 2 weeks out.
Well, I may be wrong. But nevertheless, look into it if you are registered. If not, I've just been seeing a bunch of things. See if you are. And just go out and get your opinion heard and get your vote count. Your vote does count.
Figure out whether you're registered and go contribute. Be a part of our democracy. Only works when everybody votes. So get after it.
All right.
Good stuff, everybody. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the Houston Open. We're back next week. And do you know what next week is, Tyler? Do you know what next week is?
Masters Week!
Masters Week in November. If we're lucky, we'll have Woody on, and he'll give some winners. And, just really looking forward to the Masters. Geeked for a November Masters. So, everybody, have a great week. Enjoy the Houston Open.
Don't flood Cancun, Colby.
Yeah, we'll try not to wash away. Thanks for listening once again to the 73rd Hole.